I think an event organizer is much more likely to ask you back if you're helpful when you can be.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. In this episode, I get to catch up again with the brilliant Janice Thomas, who isn't a relation. Janice has been on the show before, episode 404, telling us about the e-commerce business she works for. But this time we're talking about something totally different. After listening to episode 473, where I was sharing my tips for making the most of attending e-commerce events, Janice emailed me to suggest a follow-up episode all about how to become a speaker at e-commerce events. It's one of the most frequent questions she gets asked by her mentees, so we're pretty confident a lot of you listening will be interested in this advice. How do you go about getting your first speaking gig? How do you go about becoming a better speaker? How do you go about building this as part of your career, as part of your business? That's what we're going to be discussing. So if you regularly look at the lineups of events and think, why aren't I on that stage? Then this is definitely for you. Keep listening. And if you're just curious about what goes on behind the scenes of those events and how people go about creating those presentations and everything else that goes on, we're sharing a lot of the behind the scenes stuff in this. So you're going to love this one as well. Please listen right to the end so you don't miss out on my guest's insider top tips, because she's talking both e-commerce and speaking in that, and also my own take on this episode. If your tech stack is becoming a bottleneck to growth, it's time to replatform, and you should check out Shopline. Shopline is the modern commerce platform that's disrupting Europe as one of Asia's leading e-commerce platforms. Whether your bottleneck is setting up more sales channels like social commerce or expanding to new markets globally, Shopline takes care of everything from store setups, checkouts and payments to logistics and more. With single-click migration and out-of-the-box tools, they're there to help. The best part about it? You don't need to pay until your site is live. Here in the UK, they power brands like In The Style and Everything £5, whilst in Asia, they're the platform of choice for huge brands like Lego and Muji. If you want to scale, it's time to book your free trial or have a chat with one of the Shopline team. Find out what Shopline could do for you via ecmp.info/Shopline. That's ecmp.info/Shopline. Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook. And now to introduce our special guest. Janice Thomas is the Managing Director at Look Fabulous Forever, the innovative cosmetics and skincare brand designed to meet the needs of older women. They're a D2C brand in the UK, selling globally to a customer base that's often ignored by the D2C world, who they're serving via a Magento site. Founded in 2013, Janice has been driving the growth strategy for just over 4 years, and they're currently doing millions a year and working towards the double figure millions target. Hello, Janice.
Hello, Chloe. Thank you for having me.
Always lovely to have you on the podcast. I can't believe it's been 2 years since you've last been on, so you're definitely overdue a visit. So thanks so much for suggesting this topic. But before we get into our topic, Congratulations, because since we last spoke on the podcast, you've been promoted to managing director, so you've taken over, and Look Fabulous Forever have acquired their manufacturing partner. So how have the last 2 years been?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say they've been busy, so that's good. But yeah, it's been really exciting, and I think for me, it's really exciting to come from that e-com technology marketing background and go into the big running the company job, and less from that traditional kind of finance or operations that you usually see. So yeah, it's really exciting, and it's great to be manufacturing in the UK, particularly as you are always so concerned about, you know, kind of carbon issues, and so the not shipping from abroad is a really key part of that for us.
I say, when I saw that announcement, I was like, that is a clever move, but gosh, that's a lot of work. So yeah, I could totally see though how it would strategically fit with the business and taking control of such an important part. Love it. Very, very cool. Well, look, I could waffle on about that, but we're here to talk about just how does one get onto the stages and do a great event speaking at events. So where does one start? If we think about one of your mentees who's going, I could be great on that stage, how do I get there? Where do you advise them to start?
Yeah, so I think it even starts before then. And I think more people should be thinking about putting their hands up for events. And it's funny, when I talk to a lot of people, they say, oh, I'm not good at public speaking. But you wouldn't say, I'm not good at flying a plane, or I'm not good at running a marathon. You think, well, those things probably require some kind of practice and training first. But, you know, it's funny how people are just closed off to the idea that they could be good at this. And I think even the really, really fantastic speakers I know, they weren't born to it and suddenly they could stand up on a stage and give, you know, a perfect, you know, 1 hour talk without notes and, you know, with amazingly engaging. This is something that we all work at every day to get good at. So I think the first step is actually, do you know what? Reconsider if you think that you're not cut out for public speaking, just have a think about that. Think about, well, actually, with the right prep and training, you probably could be, in the same way that with the right prep and training, most able-bodied people probably could run a marathon. But, you know, it's not something that you just do overnight without getting ready for it. So I think the first step is maybe question your assumption that it isn't for you. And then the next step is, right, do you know what? I would like to put my hand up. And then kind of where do you start from there?
I love that advice, because I think you're so right. People are like, I can't do public speaking. But have you ever tried? No. It's like, well, you know, A, you've got to give it a go. You've got to constantly work at it. I work at it. Every single time I do a presentation, I am working on how do I improve my technique? How do I find the way that works for me to deliver better for people? And I think there's so many different ways of, you know, if we call it getting on a stage, you can be the person who asks the questions. You can be the person who introduces people. You can be the person who, you know, moderates the Q&A. You can be the person who's on a panel. You can be the keynote speaker. And then there's about a million different ways of doing a keynote speech. So I think you've got to get out there, try it, and work out which bits you like doing the most as well, don't you?
Definitely. I 100% agree with that.
So we've decided we want to give this a go. Presumably day one, we're not going to apply to Marketing Week or try and find ourselves a speaker agent. That's not going to be our day one strategy. So where do we go once we've gone, yeah, I want to give this a go. I want to see if I can do it. I want to see how it could happen for me.
Yeah, so I think the place that I would recommend starting is, what are you passionate about? What excites you? What do you like talking about just organically? Because that's going to be the thing that is going to make it easier for you to do this. Because if you genuinely care and you genuinely bring interest and passion, you're halfway there, that it's something that you, chances are, you know about, or you're interested in researching, and your enthusiasm is going to be infectious for the audience. So you're going to naturally be an engaging speaker. And certainly when I agree to do talks, it's got to be something that I feel like I know something about and I have an opinion on. But having said that, you don't need to be an expert. That ultimately, the reason that you're being asked to speak, whether it's as a keynote speaker, as a panelist, or any of those things, is to share your perspective. So you don't need to know everything, and you don't need to be the expert, and that certainly shouldn't hold you back. It's like, well, no, if you've got an opinion on something, then that's the place to start, right? What am I passionate about? And, you know, what do I have a perspective on? And then start looking for what kind of events would that perspective or opinion apply to.
So when I kind of worked out what I wanted to talk about, started talking about things I was passionate about, I started and kind of cut my teeth at local networking events and smaller things, in-house presentations, you know, to other members of the team, to clients, that sort of thing, depending on which job I was doing. And I didn't go, you know, straight to big stages. But then I do these days come across a lot of people who, you know, their very first event is in front of 200, 300 people at a big event. So do you advise your mentees to start small and to do some kind of like training ones, I suppose, or to go big from day one?
I generally, particularly with my mentees, I tend to say, look, do a panel first. A panel is really nice and straightforward. That at a good event, they will, you'll meet the other panelists in advance, you'll discuss the questions, you know, all of those things. So you'll be ready. It's great because if you dry up and your mind goes blank, there are other people there to answer that question. So you're not going to be put on the spot. And it just gives you the opportunity to be on a big stage with the lights and the stress and, you know, kind of all of those things, and kind of see if you get used to it. And certainly my first public facing talk was a panel. And I was at that point when I did my first panel, I was already committed to a keynote speech at that point. So I did very much see it as part of the prep process. But equally, as you say, Chloe, it might start with a keynote at a small event, or, you know, an internal presentation or kind of one of those things that then evolves into something bigger. So it can be the format, or it can be the size of event and the nature of the audience.
I totally agree with what you're saying about panels being the easy bit. Being a panelist, I certainly find the easiest thing to do of all of them. I know some people find panels absolutely petrifying, so that's totally fine. If you're listening and you're finding the idea of being a panelist absolutely petrifying, that's fine. But I think for a lot of people, they are the kind of the lazy way to get on a stage. Not that there's anything lazy about it, but
indeed. And I think sometimes the panel thing is, some people don't think well on their feet and don't feel comfortable that they can just answer a question on the fly, and they feel more comfortable with a keynote where they know what they're going to say and it's 100% in their control. So I think there is an element of what works best for you. But I think as long as you're part of a panel where you're clear with the event organizer that you're going to know what the questions are in advance, then that's fine.
Let's say we've worked out what our first events are going to be. How do we then go about getting onto that lineup, becoming someone on the agenda? Do we wait for the pitch, you know, submission to come out? Do we make contact? How do we go about putting ourselves in the best chance of getting on the agenda?
I would say the first step is go to the sort of events that you want to be speaking at and talk to the event organisers, talk to the other speakers, you know, kind of how did they get involved in it. And pretty much all the speakers at every event I've ever spoken at are really happy to have those conversations with attendees about, well, what's the process, you know, kind of all of those things. Get to know event organizers. A lot of events, they are trying to record content with attendees. So, you know, putting your hand up and say, yeah, I'd love to do a video interview as an attendee can be a really good way to start making a contact. I think there are always, you know, calls for speakers and kind of applying through the website and all of those things. But also, I think building your own profile on LinkedIn and those things that you are passionate about, that people will then approach you to start talking about those things if you're clear that you've got an opinion and you have things to say and you're articulate and those kind of things, then lead to more people approaching you. So you're not always the one that has to do the pitch.
I think all that advice is brilliant, but I think what's worth knowing is these things that you don't know until you start doing the events. And kind of the more events you do, the more you start to understand that conference directors, the people in charge of, you know, who's on the bill, are forever trying to find the right people to put on that bill. They put so much effort into finding the right people. And yes, they'll look at the people who've applied, but they'll also look at who's been at other events. They'll look at who's talking about these things on LinkedIn. They'll ask people like me and Janice for recommendations. I can see Janice nodding quite violently there. I mean, the number of events who ask me, do you know someone who can do this? Do you know who's someone who can talk about this? And they're looking for both a mixture of big names, but also new voices, new opinions, something different, someone who isn't at every single other event across the year. And they're also looking for diversity in their lineups as well, which is hard to get, I say, as someone who tries to create diversity in her own events. Diversity is really tough in the industry because there's not enough people putting their hands up. Janice, I just kind of ranted there. Anything you would add into that little rant of mine?
No, I'd 100% agree. And there are a lot of people that I've recommended as experts on particular topics where I haven't necessarily seen them speak, but I know, like, I know this person really knows their stuff, so therefore I think they would be great on this topic, and chances are if they're passionate then they will be a great speaker.
I once did a professional speaking course, as in the business of speaking, and the number one way to get more speaking gigs is to do speaking gigs. And included within that would be podcast guest appearances, would be webinar appearances. So the more of those kind of virtual and audio things you do, the more likely you are, and LinkedIn Lives and all those kind of lovely things, the more likely you are to get spotted and be picked up on something as well. So let's say we've secured our first speaking gig. What sort of things do you do, Janice, or do you advise people to do to make sure they're ready for, you know, setting themselves up for success on the day?
You've got to decide, what are you talking about? And I think particularly if you are pitching to someone, you're actually doing a written pitch, that's actually quite helpful because you've had to think about what it is that you want to talk about. Why do you want to talk about it? What are the key things that you want to say? So actually, if you've been through the pitch process, you're part the way there because you're really clear about what your proposition is, and your event organizer says, yes, that's something that I'm interested in you talking about. So actually going through the pitch process can be quite useful. I would say start with data collection, you know, kind of do your research, know your stuff, because if you're confident about what you're talking about, that's going to come through in your delivery as well as your content. So really, really know your stuff, really, really know what you want to say. What are the kind of three or four things that pull this together? Like, for example, if I'm talking about loyalty, I say, right, we have four pillars of loyalty. They are community, personalization, listening, and useful and helpful content. So I've got a structure to how I'm going to talk about that particular topic. And for me, I start pulling together slides. I think, right, how does this narrative run through that? You know, start with, why am I talking about this topic? You know, this year I'm talking a lot about full funnel marketing. So like, why is full funnel marketing particularly relevant in 2024? Why should we really be paying attention to that now? So I'm giving you some context. I'm then going to tell you, right, I'm going to talk about these four things. I go through the four things, and then I come with a summary at the end and say, these are the key things I talked about. So having that structure really helps. So that's kind of where I start in terms of pulling that data together and start writing something. As part of that process, I am not and never writing a script. I am writing bullet points on what are the key beats that I want to make. And where I have seen people struggle with presenting has typically been where they either have a script or they've tried to learn what they want to say word for word. And unless you are an incredibly talented actor, it is not a great experience for your audience typically. So you have to think about what are the key beats and key messages that you want to get across with each slide at each point in your presentation, rather than knowing it word for word. So for me, I'll do a draft and then I will rehearse it. And by rehearse it, I mean I will talk out loud every word I am going to say as if I were standing in front of an audience. Reading through does not cut it, because you can't tell when you read something where you're going to get stuck, where you're going to get stumble, where you're going to get confused, where you're going to lose your place. And ironically, by going through that rehearsal process, it tells you what's wrong with your slides. It tells you what's missing. It tells you where the storytelling narrative doesn't flow properly. So if I'm doing a brand new talk and I'm an experienced speaker, I will probably do 3 or 4 run-throughs depending on how smooth they go. And I won't do them like in one day. I will spread them over time. I'll do a run-through, I'll then do my corrections, and then I'll come back probably a week later where it's not completely fresh in my mind to then do another run-through. I'm checking, am I hitting the right time? And all of those things. So it's an iterative process. And I think it's also worth saying that generally, if I'm doing a new presentation from scratch, my first run through will be rubbish. I heard Simon Sinek talk recently, and he wasn't talking about presenting specifically, but the analogy he used I found really helpful. It's like making pancakes. Like the first pancake you make is a bit rubbish and you're like, oh no, I'll eat that one. I'm not gonna show that to anyone else. So you go through this process of working out, you know, the consistency of the batter and the temperature and all of those things. And you make some quite rubbish pancakes before you make a good one, which I think is also a really important point. Don't compare your first pancake to somebody who's been making them every day for years.
Yeah, I think that is such good advice. I love the pancake analogy. And I think the don't do all your prep in one day as well. For me, it has to be, I work on it, I sleep on it. I work on it, I sleep on it. I work on it, I sleep on it. Interestingly, for me, doing a spoken rehearsal doesn't cut it because I get bored. If I do it too many times aloud, I would get bored. I had the same problem with exam questions. Long, boring story about nearly failing my degree. But the, Janice looked so interesting. We're clearly talking about that post-podcast. Sorry, everybody. But I can't do the kind of like the full-on stand-up rehearsal. Maybe I should, maybe I'd be better for it, but I find it a bit dull. But I will have, by the time my slides are finalized, I will probably go through them maybe 5 or 6 times, building my cue cards, running the story in my head. I think of it as a story arc to hit the right beats on the story arc. I will run that maybe 5 or 6 times. I will spend at least 2 hours of my train journey to the event, because I usually spend at least 4 hours on a train to any event. It's logistics. It's not through choice. But I will spend at least 2 hours of that going through the deck. And by that point, the deck doesn't change. The slide deck is the same. I'm just perfecting what notes I want to hit and those bits, but just in a slightly different way to Janice's. But I think is one of the key things is you have to find the method that works for you, which comes back to Janice's earlier point about, you know, you're not going to be perfect on day one. You find those beats, you find that way that works for you. Janice, I ask the organisers a whole pile of questions before I start my slide deck. Things like, how long have I got? Is Q&A included, not included? Am I being introduced? Where is my session in the day? Is it after a break, before a break? Do you want me to be able to do this quicker or longer to fill time if you need me to? What's the tech setup? A lot of that's about making me feel comfortable and making sure I'm doing a good job for them. But another question I ask them is, what do you want the audience to leave the event thinking? Because I feel like I have 3 kind of stakeholders when I'm giving a presentation. One is myself. I don't want to let myself down. I want to meet my objectives, which usually my objectives are making the event organizer happy, because I do this for a living, to be honest. I'm not trying to get leads. It's generally making the event organizer happy or inspiring people to listen to the podcast. Then my second stakeholder is the event organizer, because they've put all those people in the room and my job is to make them look good. So I want to know what they want to happen. And then the third one is the audience, which is kind of both me and the event organizer want to make the audience happy, but I want to understand what the event organizer wants the audience to leave thinking and feeling. And I find that to be such a good guiding light for helping me work out what to say. You know, what do they want to leave with? Lots of tactical stuff. Do they want to leave inspired? Do they want to leave thinking about retention or acquisition or something else? I mean, and I have to say, I ask a lot of questions and I've never had anyone refuse to give me the answers. They might come back in a different format. Do you ask many questions in advance? Because a lot of them, you know, give you pretty good briefings anyway. What's your approach to that, Janice?
I'm generally will agree what I'm talking about, which potentially covers off some of those things. But apart from that, I only generally want to know how long is it and does that include Q&A or not? But then I think I come from a particular perspective. I'm always going to be a retailer. You're going to have asked me to talk about whether it's loyalty or personalization or the value of older consumers in society or whatever it is. It comes from me. Yeah.
When you're a retailer representing a company, there is quite a lot that's implicit in what you're talking about, as opposed to when you're someone like me who is sharing opinions, I suppose, isn't it? Although you are sharing opinions, they are from a specific perspective.
Yeah, because I think part of the reason I do this is I actually have a motivation about how I want my audience to feel. So I want them to go away and try full funnel marketing or personalization or targeting older consumers, that I have an agenda that I am going in with.
And I suspect actually for some people their agenda is more important than the event's agenda, which when you're a retailer, that's probably why you've been asked, is because your agenda naturally fits. So it's the nuances are quite interesting, but I think it's interesting how we all approach it differently, which is an example of why you have to find the right way that works for you. Anything else you do before the day itself to set yourself up well?
Logistics, like work out how are you going to get there, what time do they want you on site, you know, that kind of stuff. Always, I say always, not as actually as good as that, but unless I'm certain they've got my presentation and they've replied yes, we've received that, I normally bring it on a USB stick just in case if I've not had that confirmation back. I just want to make sure if anything goes wrong on the day that I've got that as a backup. I think about what I'm wearing. For me, that's really, really important. And you and I have had the conversation before, Chloe, that I love to wear something bright and colourful, because for me, it makes me feel great. But B, I find it quite difficult to start conversations from scratch at events. So as a speaker, wearing something really distinctive, it means that people are much more likely to come up to me and start making conversation with me. And I like that, which is part of the reason that I do that. But I think there is something about, like, what are you wearing? Should be really you. And people are making an impression, gaining impression of you the moment they see you, before you even start speaking. So what do you want them to think about you?
Yeah, I think dress is so important, and being bright. I mean, I'm only 5'2", so I have to wear heels. Otherwise, sometimes if the audience are on the same level as the stage, some people aren't going to be able to see me, quite frankly. But yeah, shiny things are good. I was taught that by a stylist. It's things that you're comfortable in. There's nothing worse than seeing a speaker on stage pulling their top down or their trousers up or something. Another thing on the dress is if you're doing panels or that sort of thing, find out what they're expecting you to sit on.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry, but don't wear a short skirt when I'm on a panel ever. Yeah.
Yeah. Be prepared to be how you're going to be sitting. If you're going to be sitting and the stomach is a bit like mine, you've got the old Menno belly on the go, don't wear the skin type, because it's not going to look good in a chair. You know, and you may see those images going around LinkedIn for a long time, but think through something that's comfortable, that looks good, that's easy to wear. Bring that with you. I regularly have a spare top with me, just in case. I haven't got as nervous as bringing a spare pair of jeans, but I do generally have a spare t-shirt with me or a spare top. I've been known to change into presenting mode halfway through an event as well, but I'm possibly getting a little bit kind of expert level here. So I'll pause at that point. But yeah, bring what you need to bring on the day to make you feel good. Organise that logistical part of it. Then on the day itself, Janice, what's your process?
And I've been doing this for a long time and I do a lot. So I'm normally quite relaxed on the day, that because I've done everything in advance, I want to check in with the event organizer. I normally just make sure there's nothing that I need to know. The time hasn't changed or anything like that, that, you know, kind of particularly, I've got quite a few event organizers that I've known for a long time and have a good relationship with, who've sometimes said to me, oh, actually, would you be able to step in at the last minute on a panel because I've had someone drop out? And I always say yes if I can, if it's relevant, because I'm there anyway. And I think an event organizer is much more likely to ask you back if you're helpful when you can be.
Oh, definitely. You want to be a little bit memorable to them if you want to get booked again. You want to go, you know, and tell them the second you arrive that you're there so they can tick you off and they go, that person's in the building. Always brilliant. Generally, I like to be at a whole event. Even if I'm only doing a session last thing in the afternoon, I like to be there for the whole day so I can feel the vibe. I feel like that makes me more comfortable. It also means I've seen multiple people get on that stage and leave that stage. So I know how the whole thing is functioning. So I'll make sure I see a session on whatever stage I'm going to be on. I will try and go and see the tech guys, because you want them to be your friends. I'll go and see the tech guys early on in a break and just check the seat, if there's a seat involved. Work out how the layout's going to be. Work out what sort of mic I'm going to be dealing with. And actually on the clothing front, if you're wearing a lapel mic or there's wires, wear something that works with, because that's one which can be a bit complicated. So trousers are good on that front. It's kind of like, make yourself feel comfortable, enjoy the day, be nice to the conference organizer, and then I'll usually ferret myself away like 30 minutes before my session and get in the zone. I find, you know, going straight from networking to 30 seconds later on stage doesn't really work for me. How about you, Janice?
Oh, no, I don't want to think about it too much beforehand. So actually, I try to be in another session until they actually need me, because otherwise I overthink it and I might get anxious. So actually, I want to be in somebody else's session, you know, kind of listening at the back while they're getting me mic'd up. Because I normally wear a dress, I prefer to hold the pack for a lapel mic that I often don't have a belt or, you know, pockets or anything. So I'm all set, being like, no, I'm happy to hold it, you know, those kind of things. And before I did speaking, I actually did quite a lot of research into like how to do it well. And one of the things that I found useful that I'm quite careful about is that you shouldn't have hot or cold drinks immediately before you, when you speak, because it affects your vocal cords. So actually the best thing you can possibly drink is room temperature water. So I try to make sure there is water and it's not just out of the fridge.
And cheese and spicy foods on that topic are also not so great for the vocal cords if you don't want to sound unclear as you go through. We've covered a lot, Janice. What have we missed that we should be? Because I know you've done a load of prep for this, so I don't want to leave anything on your notes list and not on the show.
Questions, that's the thing that we should definitely talk about.
Yes. Okay, so Q&A's almost always part of a presentation. How do you, and I know a lot of people are kind of like, oh God, they're going to the audience, anything could be asked. What's your advice on handling that?
My advice is, whatever happens, you will be fine, I promise you. So the very first panel I did, the first question from the audience was from someone who shall remain nameless, who's a minor celebrity in my youth. And this person asked me, I was working for Birchbox at the time, and she asked me, on average, how many boxes do subscribers stay for? And I said, I'm really sorry, that's commercially sensitive, I can't share that. And she would not let it go. And eventually the event organizer had to cut her off? So this was like my first ever question at my first ever panel, and it was just about as bad as you can possibly get. So I think it's fine to say, I don't know, that's not my area of expertise, that's confidential, or even I'll find out and come back to you. All of those things are fine. You do not have to have an answer. I remember doing a panel where I'd seen all the questions in advance and the moderator went off script and said, what are you doing with blockchain? And the answer was nothing. Unfortunately, one of the other panelists was actually doing something with it, so could tell an interesting story. But it's fine if you don't have an answer, I think, is the best possible advice. Is there's no such thing as a wrong answer. You can't get it wrong. So don't worry about saying some variant of, no, I'm not answering that.
It comes back to exactly what you're saying earlier, Janice. They're there for your expertise. So your opinion is the one they want to hear. And if you don't have the answer, just say they don't have the answer. I think my most embarrassing panel moment, to share that too, was I was actually chairing the panel. So I was the one kind of bringing the questions from the audience to the panelists. And someone in the audience asked about TikTok. It was a social media panel. This was in about, it was pre-pandemic. Was it mid-pandemic? It was a good few years ago when TikTok wasn't huge. I don't have children. I didn't know what TikTok was. So I said, well, I don't know what TikTok is. Audience, how many of you have heard of TikTok? Every hand in the room went up. And I went, well, I guess I've got some swatting up to do after this. And luckily the panelists knew about it. Not my finest moment, but, you know, you have to roll with it. And Janice gave you a whole load of great kind of prep answers for saying, I don't know the answer to that. So have a few of those prepped and ready to go is always good. And if you're really nervous about it, plant someone in the audience and tell them to ask a question for you, or give the person who's moderating, if there is one, give them some questions that you'd love to be asked at the end. Most organisers are happy for you to do that. Or you can, as you're going through the slide deck, I don't have time to talk about this right now, but if anyone wants to know more in the Q&A, you can kind of like prime them to ask you a specific question. Yeah, I think that's such a good point. I think we've possibly covered everything there. Janice, anything else?
I think we've covered everything, yeah.
You're all going to get loads of ideas for this. I look forward to seeing you all on stages soon. Now, though, we're going to head towards the top tips round.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
If your tech stack is becoming a bottleneck to growth, it's time to replatform, and you should check out Shopline. Shopline is the modern commerce platform that's disrupting Europe as one of Asia's leading e-commerce platforms. Whether your bottleneck is setting up more sales channels like social commerce or expanding to new markets globally, Shopline takes care of everything from store setups, checkouts and payments to logistics and more. With single-click migration and out-of-the-box tools, they're there to help. The best part about it, you don't need to pay until your site is live. Here in the UK, they power brands like In The Style and Everything £5, whilst in Asia, they're the platform of choice for huge brands like Lego and Muji. If you want to scale, it's time to book your free trial or have a chat with one of the Shopline team. Find out what Shopline could do for you via ecmp.info/Shopline. That's ecmp.info/Shopline. Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organise the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook.
It's time for the top tips round.
I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. Janice, are you ready for the top tips?
I am.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off to read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
So in the spirit of this episode, I'm going to recommend a book called Captivate by Vanessa Van Edwards, which is about how to start conversations with people, both small conversations and big conversations. The first time you meet someone, as you build a relationship with someone, it's a really brilliant, practical book that if you want to get out there and start going to more events and speaking to more people, it's a great place to start.
Love that recommendation. Okay, traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
I think right now it's got to be about full funnel marketing, that with cookies going away, with the change in the Meta and Google algorithms, with all of the landscape now, you've got to think about the customer's whole journey to purchase and building a relationship with them, building awareness before you convert, and looking at that whole full funnel right now. I think the brands that are doing really well right now are really nailing that full funnel approach.
We call it going back to basics. We call it better marketing. It's full funnel, everybody. Get the message right. Be consistent. Talk to the right people. Attract them in. Love that advice. Thank you, Janice. Tool top tip. Maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
Definitely. So for me, it would be LinkedIn Learning. And particularly when I was starting doing talking, there's so many fantastic videos from really practical advice, fantastic speakers, so many tips. And you know, it's not very much. I think it's about £30 a month. You can watch unlimited videos. So I would say LinkedIn Learning is a fantastic resource if you're looking to do more speaking, and to be honest, for your personal development generally, it's a brilliant resource.
Love that. I've never dived into it. Keep seeing it there, never dived in. So there's a top recommendation. Carbon top tip. What's your favourite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
I would say the question is, do you really need your customer to return something to you, or can you ask them to keep it or pass it on to a friend? That obviously that doesn't work if you're in an industry where you've got a 40% returns rate, but if you've got a low returns rate, what's the cost and implication of having those goods returned versus the goodwill of saying just keep it?
Yeah, I think the it must come back to the warehouse is not necessarily a hill to die on from a cost perspective, let alone a carbon perspective. Love that advice. Thank you, Janice. Now, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media?
We're lookfabulousforever.com, and you can find Tricia Cusden, our founder, on YouTube.
Brilliant. Janice, thank you so much for being on the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. It's been brilliant chatting to you about event strategy. I've learned stuff. I'm sure the audience has too. So thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Chloe.
So quite an interesting light shed behind the world of speaking there for all of you. Hopefully you found that quite fascinating and learned a lot. I learned quite a lot from Janice's process. There's a few things I'll be incorporating into what I do now. And I hope that's given you an idea of how to go about getting those first speaking gigs. I guess for me, the two biggest things are it's a skill that you work through. And as you can see, we both perfected it in different ways and in different angles into terms of how we do it. So don't expect to be brilliant on day one. There's loads of opportunity out there. And don't just work at getting better, but work at working out how it works for you, how you can do what you want to achieve with your speaking activity, whatever your objectives may be. You can get your hands on our notes from this episode, including those top tips and links to what we mentioned by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast or use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/ the number of this episode into the URL bar and you'll be redirected straight to the right episode page. When you add yourself to our website, please do add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business. And if you liked this episode, then why not find out a bit more about events and how to go about attending events in episode 473, which I did earlier this year, all about how to make the most of events when you're an attendee. Or have a listen to episode 404, when we're discussing Look Fabulous Forever with Janice and she's sharing some of her e-commerce knowledge. And if you fancy being a guest on this show, and using that as the starting point for your speaking journey, maybe, then head to ecmp.info/guest to pitch me a topic. Even if it's something a bit left field, like this one with Janice, which Janice messaged me about, you can put that in via the guest application form at ecmp.info/guest too. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you all for tuning into this and every episode that you do of the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.
If your tech stack is becoming a bottleneck to growth, it's time to replatform, and you should check out Shopline. Shopline is the modern commerce platform that's disrupting Europe as one of Asia's leading e-commerce platforms. Whether your bottleneck is setting up more sales channels like social commerce or expanding to new markets globally, Shopline takes care of everything from store setups, checkouts and payments to logistics and more. With single-click migration and out-of-the-box tools, they're there to help. The best part about it, you don't need to pay until your site is live. Here in the UK, they power brands like In The Style and Everything £5, whilst in Asia, they're the platform of choice for huge brands like Lego and Muji. If you want to scale, it's time to book your free trial or have a chat with one of the Shopline team. Find out what Shopline could do for you via ecmp.info/Shopline. That's ecmp.info/Shopline.